Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRouche Show, Saturday, July 18th, 2009. My name is Marcia Mary Baker, and our topic for discussion today is the Great American Global Cooling. I'm glad to say we have on this interesting topic two guests, one from 21st Century Science and Technology, Greg Murphy. Welcome, Greg.
Glad to be here.
And who's the associate editor there, and especially on this great hoax of global warming, has a lot to say. And I'm very glad to have with us from the LaRouche Youth Movement of the LaRouche Political Action Committee, Ali Parabikovsky. Ali, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello, Marcia.
Thank you. She's very much with us, and many of you have seen her work besides seeing her person on the LaRouchePAC.com website of the LaRouche Political Action Committee and their daily LPAC TV clips, especially the off-the-cuff daily program, and also some of the feature clips of LPAC TV. So we'll get to that kind of thing in a moment, but back to the topic on the Great American Global Cooling, in fact, planetary cooling. We really are today going to discuss the weather in the sense that it's great that Mother Nature herself has been refuting Al Gore, the great blob. And we want to cover over the hour aspects of the political pedigree that gave us this hoax of global warming and the threat of meltdown of the planet, that that it's man's activities that causes this, and we should stop humankind from increasing because that's the only way to prevent heat death of the earth, that kind of craziness. We're really faced in this with another expression of select financial circles that should best be understood as neo-British empire trying to dominate and prevent the development of civilization. And in fact, as the crash has been getting worse, to just stay on top of the heap, that's their intention. And the question is raised is, why is the public so susceptible to the kind of lie that there is global warming? So this is the kind of, this and other things we'll be discussing in a few seconds, but I want to just stress at the outset that our discussion today comes at a very critical political moment in Washington, D.C., in the sense that President Obama, who has made preventing global warming by capping carbon dioxide emissions and trading them and having this crazy legislation, as well as trying to reduce population by having a kind of Nazi so-called healthcare reform and kill people, he has been willing to go along with these kinds of imperial policies, a stooge like Al Gore, but he's in big trouble. Yesterday, President Obama had, in fact, called a really last-minute press appearance to say, go with my program or else. That's his assigned role, to push these crazy, terrible programs through. And he said, and everyone else should shut up unless they have an alternative. And I'd like you to refer you to the LaRouche Political Action Committee, because LaRouche was filmed then giving the alternative. I understand Ali Parabikovsky helped produce all that. And you can see that clip on www.larouchepac.com. LaRouche answers the challenge of Obama. So the thing is, at this critical moment, we have a tremendous opportunity and a tremendous responsibility to change course for humanity. And you should know two things. 2 weeks from today, on August 1st, a Saturday, there will be a webcast given based out of Washington, D.C. by Lyndon LaRouche. It's at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And you can tune in here to our weekly LaRouche show at 3 and catch that. But otherwise, watch at 1, clear your schedule. And that is done by the LaRouche Political Action Committee on LaRouchePAC.com. And the second thing is, Mr. LaRouche, because of the turning point period in the whole world situation right now, is writing a series of absolutely crucial papers on understanding the real economics. We can get into that more, but I refer you to the websites of on which you are listening now of the Executive Intelligence Review, LaRouchePub.com, or those of you listen by phone during the week, go on that website or go on LaRouchePub.com. He's been writing, especially look for the latest, The Rule of Natural Law. This follows the economic science in short, and he's working on yet another one. So more on that, or otherwise go and see for yourself. But let's start now, though, and jump into the discussion, as I promised, with a weather report. We want to turn to Greg Murphy and say, how is it? What's you I heard you and some other people said we should get our fur coats out for August, but summarize this in terms of how Al Gore is refuted. What's going on?
Okay, what has happened in the past week or so is that you've had the G8 and Al Gore out speaking saying that they can control temperature down to 2 degrees. Well, that may actually be able to happen because right now, presently, the sun's activity has been so low that the temperatures have actually been falling to show that Al Gore's, that Mother Nature doesn't really want to be fooled with. This last past week on July 7th, a major ice storm, hailstorm with a little bit of snow, hit the northeastern seaboard. In Yonkers, New York, it was reported that people had to have the fire department come shovel out their garages. This is July, remember?
It blew in from, I heard, it blew in their garage doors if they left them open.
And they had even lowest temperatures all the way up through the Prince Edward Island and also throughout the northern plain states have had, they're now taking the word high out of their high temperatures now because they've had the lowest amount of higher temperatures on record than they've had since they've been keeping records. So now you have all this happening, and the question is why is this happening? The sun has been in the lowest activity it's been with sunspots, if you're watching that, which is actually dark spots on the sun, which are highly magnetic, and they count how many they have, and they have an 11-year solar cycle, which was discovered by a collaborator of Alexander von Humboldt, Heinrich Schwabe, who later on was picked up by the British and his work was subverted. But he did find that there was a historical high and low record that averaged out to about 11 years. Now, what has been found over the period is people doing research, mainly in Danish work has been done, that shows that there's a correlation of length of solar cycle to amount of cooling of temperatures or temperature change over the next solar cycle.
In other words, it follows after
Yeah.
a change in the sunspot intensity.
Yes,
Okay.
that is the point. Is so they found, and the Australian geologist Dave Archibald has done work on this, continuing this correlation, and has found that for every 1 year of increase in the solar cycle, there is a 0.5 degree Celsius decrease in temperature over the length of the following solar cycle. So now we are now looking at if we have the solar minimum ends, which is now being predicted for January of this year, of next year, 2010, we're looking at somewhere close between 13 to 14 year cycle. So that's about 1 degree to 1.5 degree, which can really cause a real climate shift that we've seen. And that may not sound much to people that are listening to this, but remember, for the entire global warming that Al Gore and President Obama wants to save us from was only 0.6 degrees Celsius for 150 years. And the average temperature that has been dropped based on satellite temperature, that has actually been negated in the recent period with the last past 8 year cooling trend that we have been in. So we're really looking at a point of where we're going to have really severe winters, growing places where we've had ability to grow food because of the modest warming has been opening because the greening areas have gone almost to the Arctic Circle based on the NASA satellite data, will start becoming very cool and very much at a point where they won't be able to grow food. So you'll have high food stress. And it also should be noted that the last time that a solar cycle was more than 13 years was the Dalton minimum, which was 1796 to 1824. And that had massive crop failures, food shortages, and also Napoleon was frozen as he left Moscow during that time period.
We also see a lot of paintings from that period of all the wonderful ice skating, Hans Brinker and the Silver Skates.
Oh yeah, that's also was one of the last during that period was the last time that the Thames froze over in London, which is, it's so we're actually setting a case where drastic cooling is on the march, and all we're talking about is capping and cutting back on energy production when we should be doing quite the opposite.
Right. Now, the other thing, so this really raises again the hoax factor of Al Gore himself putting forward, what was it, January 2006,
Yes.
that was the Inconvenient Truth movie, that, and he charged, he gave these charts and he climbed a ladder to say, look at things are going through the stratosphere in the way of the way the Earth is heating up. So actually, what you're saying, it was a complete black is white or white is black lie.
Yeah, it's typical Bertrand, the Bertrand Russell lie, convince children that, white snow is black. But it may cost too much, so we only teach them that the snow is just dark gray. But it's the same kind of outlook is what you have with this. And on that note, based on the recent satellite data, even more fun that we can poke at Al Gore, which he deserves every bit we can give him on this, is that in January 2006, he released his science fiction horror comedy, The Inconvenient Truth. From that point and to current, based on satellite data, the temperature has dropped 0.74 degrees Fahrenheit or 0.39 degrees Celsius. So actually, we used to joke around when Al Gore spoke in D.C. on Capitol Hill about global warming, there were massive ice storms and power outages, and we thought that was just a local effect. He spoke in Toronto, there was snow, and it saved the girl, little girl's Christmas because Al Gore spoke there. That's very nice of him to do that. But we've now found out, based on the satellite data, that the Gore effect is actually global.
And these satellite, this is done on a monthly basis. They take some temperature of the Earth in a way. Is
Yeah,
that what you're saying?
they monitor based on the satellites that the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration maintains. They have microwave sensing that, collectors that study the atmospheric and surface temperatures. And this is done every day with an 85% coverage of the planet by these satellites, and they average it once a month and release it. Based on the satellite data, we've had a cooling trend of about 10 years. On the surface data, it's about 8 years.
You know what's interesting is it's so interesting listening to this and looking at one the kind of situation we're in. If we take everything from the kind of crisis that we're currently facing right now, which it literally is endgame at this point. And it's not endgame in terms of just a monetary system or, some sort of an economic system that's collapsing. You're looking at a collapse of the entirety of civilization. And you look at something like this hoax that they've managed to pull through, or that they're trying to pull over on society, this hoax of global warming. What it really is it's trying to tell the population that there is, because what it is it's saying that human beings are responsible for this unnatural warming, that human beings, and Al Gore perpetuates all of these different doomsday scenarios. California is going to be underwater. New York is going to be flooded. The sun will heat up and deserts will encroach all over the land. And he's trying to really, what it is it's this move to show that what human beings are is a scourge on the planet, that whenever we actually go and change the biosphere, when we act to make a discovery, to actually work something out, to figure out what the truth of something is, that we actually end up destroying the planet. And in reality, and I think that kind of an orientation which has existed, Mr. LaRouche has identified, is he's identified that that kind of orientation had become the dominant factor, the dominating dynamic, ever since you had the boomers, the baby boomer generation come in. That before that, you had an orientation towards productivity. You had an orientation towards people looking at the kind of earth that they were occupying, the kind of land area, the kind of solar system they were occupying, and saying, how can we master this? How can we figure out the principles necessary to actually, one, increase our standard of living, but also increase the productivity of the biosphere itself? And you had a shift from that kind of a dynamic to the baby boomers, to this liberal mentality, that any kind of even looking at a question like that was horrendous. That was evil, is what it became. And I think that, more than anything, that kind of a mentality has led to the kind of collapse that we're seeing today. So by pushing this hoax, what they have done is effectively they are creating the conditions for a collapse of society to occur even deeper than it currently is.
Right.
They're creating the conditions for there to be no society whatsoever.
Right. And speaking of this shift you just talked about, from a production, mm-hmm. productive, creative orientation to a dead end, it's all over, resources are used up. There's a certain kind of period in the particular campaign of lies, I think, about that heat death and global warming that came in the 1970s. It's in the time frame you just mentioned, Allie, about when mm-hmm. the boomers were coming up into their own. And this was let's refer to a 1975 conference where this terrible operative for the British Empire, Margaret Mead, the so-called anthropologist, and other people had a conference, and they put mm-hmm. forth this thesis. Greg, that before that, I think there were some rotten scare stories to subvert the productive orientation of the United States and other countries. But some of them were that we were all going to freeze to death. And then suddenly, overnight came, we're all going to have this global warming and boil to death. But can you say more about that particular intervention to manipulate boomers and the popular opinion?
Yes, in 1975, Margaret Mead was given a large amount of money to put on a conference, which she put on with two other organizers, William Kellogg, of the National Center for Atmospheric Research, and James Lovelock, the father of the Gaia theory, and actually, which is
the mother Gaia idea. Okay.
And what was always said, and we have run articles in 21st Century and EIR on this conference before, but what the point was, when you look at the proceedings of this, was Margaret Mead brought everybody in. This was the height, 1975 was the height of the global cooling scare of the 70s. They had two CIA reports saying that global cooling was going to freeze everything. You're going to lose food production, you're going to lose everything. There was massive reports. Newsweek, Time Magazine had this cover stories on this. You had Steven Schneider, who was actually a participant at this, was a major global cooler. Martin Perry of the University of East Anglia, who is the co-chair of the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change.
That's been the big one for what became global warming.
What was actually a global cooler and was not on this panel, per se, what Margaret Mead came on, but he came part of breakout panels that came out of it, which gave us other scares like the ozone hole and other things. So it was a total attack on science. Mead's hypothesis out of this was that you couldn't get governments to cut back on production. You couldn't get people to sacrifice if it was cooling. But if you could convince the population that warming and their activity of warming, causing warming, based on the accumulation of CO2, you could get governments to cut back, cut their throats, literally, and you could create areas where you could depopulate. So you brought in the depopulation question because this was a big thing. Mead was always lying about that from the start. Bill Kellogg was one of the first people to help bring modeling in, which was started by John von Neumann at Princeton. So this was a concentrated effort, which you had a group of people there that became with breakout panels, like the atmospheric one, where you had Sherry Rowland, who was president of the American Association for the Advancement of Sciences, which Mead was a former president of, and his current scientific advisor, Nazi, John Holdren, is also a former president of this AAAS. So it's a whole real turning institutions like the AAAS, which was founded by Thomas Edison, into a anti-human, anti-scientific development and progress instrument to actually change people's ideas from being pro-science, which was represented by the optimism that the moon landing that we'll be celebrating the 40th anniversary of this year and within the next few days was the height of the optimism. Within a few years of that, you had a conference basically saying it was time that people forget that they had the idea of creativity and to actually depopulate the world. And this was the hypothesis of Margaret Mead out of this conference was, and this led to other conferences that were put together by the UN that helped bring about this hoax we're talking about today. One was the World Climate Meeting in Stockholm, 1979, 4 years after this. They really started pushing it. They were very weak on the question that it was CO2 in their report, but some of these speeches that come in the proceedings are very horrifying about, really, you have to stop all this stuff. You have to stop energy production. And then when people are talking about cutting carbon emissions, that's a nicety of language. What you're doing is you're rationing energy that people need for development, medications, and basically to be able to stay alive. If you cut back on, like they say they want to cut 25% of carbon emissions by X date, if you do that, you literally will doom 4.5 billion people to death, mainly children. So this is the pure evil. And this is also how, like Ali brought up, this is how you destroy civilization, but not as an operating force from the outside, but you get people to accept bad ideas by not embracing science and turning their back on it like a Dionysian cult, and you create a death cult where this is brought about. And this is what Margaret Mead was trying to do with this conference and subsequently afterwards.
Well, maybe we should fast forward just to review very briefly how far things have come. As Ali said, we have a collapse crisis situation in our hands now. But in policy terms, our presidency, with Mr. Obama coming into it this spring, in January, has presided over, along with Nancy Pelosi in Congress and Senator Lugar on the Republican side. He says he's the first farmer in the United States to be involved in sequestering carbon in his soil and selling it on the Chicago Climate Exchange. Anyway, that's an aside. But this situation in Washington has bills. Do you want to summarize? In other words, there is one that was pushed through the House.
Yeah.
Can you just give us a brief? Where does it stand?
Well, right now, where it stands, what she's referring to, what Marsha's talking about, is the Markey or the Waxman-Markey bill, which was a cap and trade bill where they said they were going to cut 80% of emissions by 2050. Now, that barely passed the House by one vote more than the majority, which was done by heavy pressure, blackmail, you name it, it happened. You know, rewriting at midnight, they dumped or at 3 in the morning, they dump 300 more pages on a 1,200-page document. No one knows what's all really in this or how much this cost. Now, it passed the House. Now it's parked in the Senate. Now, there's a fight on it, but not really on the principles that we would like to see, like on the whole science end of it, or really what the effects of these bills will be. It's mainly, there's a lot of discussion in the Senate hearings that have happened over the last couple of weeks about what the cost of these bills are. Barbara Boxer is now, before these hearings in the last week, said prior to this that she was going to try to get the bill marked up and out of the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee by the August recess. She's now been backed off that a little bit, is now said the bill will be unveiled on September 8th after the Labor Day break. So things have been kind of slowed down a bit, but mainly to push this Nazi health care is, but as Nancy Pelosi put it, this is not putting one off to do the other. They're running them as like two racehorses. You run one for a while, and when it starts to get a little lame and slow up, you run the other one. So when they were pushing the cap and trade bill through the House, what happened was that the LaRouche movement had put a major buzzsaw attack onto this Nazi health care, and it had hit some problems and snags. It's got to hit a lot more, but we're doing the right thing on this. So they moved to get that off the front burner. They moved the cap and trade bill. So now cap and trade is kind of dying down a little bit. So now they're pushing the health care, and Obama typically is acting like an obsessed man on these issues. So that's where we're standing right now. There's a small fight on this in the Senate. It needs a lot broadening onto the real effects of this, which is just pure genocide. That's the only way you can even describe it. And they're not even arguing the science of it. They're just fiddling around with numbers that are based on computer models that doesn't even take into account that we're in the middle of a breakdown crisis of the economy worldwide.
Well, let's take up this question of principle just for a minute. And Allie, you may want to throw in more here, because that's at the highest level, the role of the LaRouche Political Action Committee's particular a division, let's call it, of the LaRouche Youth Movement Basement Project on real science, Kepler and so forth. This it couldn't be more critical to everything we've to putting down everything we've just discussed about the gullibility, the stupidity, and worse than that, the deliberate evil that we see in letting things go so far as talking about these emissions. Could you say something about that?
Yeah, because I think the real problem you have is you've got these bills being pushed through the House and the Senate, and they may be rammed over a lot of opposition, but as Greg brought up, what are they opposed to? Well, in the case of the cap and trade, it's cost. In the case of this fascist health care, the main argument given is it's too much government intervention, or a lot of the arguments that I've seen. And it goes to show just how crucial we are, because we're the only people out there who actually have a grasp of reality. Because you have a culture that essentially has accepted the idea that there is no such thing as truth. You have a culture that has accepted the idea that human beings are basically, that we should cut down on our intervention on the environment. And it's so crucial right now. A lot of the basement project, Lyndon LaRouche came in the other day and I guess kind of flanked a lot of the work in the basement and said, in order to really get at the prevalent misconceptions in economics right now, we have to take things from the top down. And he said, I mean really top down. And so the Basement Project right now, their orientation is to take things from the standpoint of space and how it is that we can very soon, the way, as Kraft Erica put it, become a three-dimensional economy. How can we take the mission that was taken up in the moon landing and now expand on it? How do we actually begin to get rid of, or, you know, basically leave the planet for a moment and take a look at our civilization and our society as part of a solar, of an entire solar system? And if you think about it, that's the way that mankind has been going since, well, since the very beginning of mankind. We've been going in that direction. One of the first sciences to be developed was the science of astronomy, astrogazing. You would look out into the, you know, before we had lamp posts that could, you know, light most of the night, before we had that, a lot of earlier civilizations would look up at the stars. And that was their first conception of a universe. And so you've had the development of mankind. Science, in a sense, is man's relationship to the universe, not just man's relationship to one chunk of the planet or this area or that, but the entire universe. And that is where we naturally go. And it's interesting, we've been having this reading group reading Vernadsky on Sundays. And right now we're reading Scientific Thought as a Planetary Phenomena. And in there, Vernadsky goes through, this was back in the 1930s, the late 30s or early 40s, he goes through how you have science is now developing past just, it's now transitioning the entire universe, in a sense, the entire solar system is transitioning from the development of the biosphere, the domain of living things, into the development of human cognitive thought, the noosphere, as a planetary force. Vernadsky saw human cognitive thought, human creativity, as a force within society, that that is its own force. And if you actually look at the development of human economy, if you look at the development of industry throughout the years, if you just take a look at our use of energy, we went from the burning of living biomass, such as wood, for example, or other bushes, to a much more concentrated form of energy, the burning of coal, fossil fuels, which is actually just the deposits of dead organisms compressed by the biosphere, compressed into a very concentrated form. And by burning that rather than the living biomass, we actually get much more energy and we get a transformation within our entire economy. You have the ability to have an industrial revolution, which is what occurred. So right now we're at a point, we've been at a point for probably the last more than 60 years, where if we do not actually go beyond what we have, both in terms of energy, if we do not go towards nuclear power, in terms of the space program, if we actually don't leave this planet, and in terms of our conception of our relationship to the universe, then you're seeing a doomed civilization. Because the natural way for mankind to go is, you know, more and more top down, is to master more and more of our solar system. So that's what a lot of our orientation is. Really, you're looking at, if we want to win this fight right now, if we actually want to win the fight against the insane cap and trade global warming hoaxers, if we want to win the fight against the healthcare, the Nazi healthcare reform, if we want to actually save civilization, then we have to change the dynamic that's dominating the planet away from the baby boomer mentality, away from this liberalism, which really, if you think about it, liberalism is just another word for fascism, and towards this kind of a scientific conception of mankind. And that has to be the dominating cultural dynamic. in a sense, that's our job right now. That's the actual political mission of the LaRouche Political Action Committee. That's what it's going to take to win, is to change people's notion of what it means to have an economy. And economics is not just crunching numbers. It's not the statistical graphs you find in high school and college classes. It really is the way Vernadsky and Lyndon LaRouche see it, as human creativity's force within the universe. Our force to change our planet and to change our own condition, our own standard of living.
Right, thanks. One thing you were talking about when you described over the centuries successions of higher level forms of harnessing power from wood and twigs and into coal, into oil. In Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, I'm just reminded frequently of the museum they have there of the history of the state. It's a coal state, like West Virginia and part of the Appalachians, and they have a diorama of just what you're saying about the compression of the organisms and the biomass that gave rise to those fossil deposits, which we've been using, and that's fine, as long as they are a bridge to the future, which is a permanent way in a noetic approach to the universe to live. But I understand Mr. LaRouche in a meeting with Ali, with you and others of his LaRouche Political Action Committee staff this morning, was putting this in terms of you should be going, as humanity should be going, from potential to potential to potential, you know, call it technological advance and so forth. So back to this, what we've been describing in the politics and the lies of this global warming and other kinds of hoaxes, it's destroying the potential to exist, right? It's destroying. And that's the, I mean, I'm just, it's another way, it's the same way, it's another expression of the terrible evil of this. And this is very deliberate. In some sense right now, I don't know if it's right to say it's funny. Is it one of the leaders of this, Prince Charles, I understand, gave us a deadline?
Yeah, 96 months, which is actually better than, you know.
He says that's, we're going to have heat death in 96 months unless we do something.
96 months, yeah. It'll all be done. Forget it. You know, it's the end of the line, which, you know, he gave us a deadline on it. Al Gore's been talking about 10 years, 10 years, 10 years, but he's been doing it for three. So when did we begin? That's, you know, the kind of funny thing. But there have been people that have commented on what this dupey Prince Charles, and that's some of these people's own words, and these are former professors in Britain that are saying this, that are totally opposed to Prince Charles and Prince Philip, who see these guys as basically another species. They're not even human.
Yeah, let me point out to our listeners and so forth that, and others, that Greg, among others, has interviewed some of the patriots in Britain. I mean, patriots for humanity that have been speaking out against Charles, against Sir Nicholas Stern, against Mr. Blood, who is the co-chairman with Al Gore of the Blood and Gore, I kid you not, management company for that's a London-based hedge fund that's making money off things like the potential of the future of cap and trade of CO2. But do you want to mention, one of them is Lord Monckton, I believe, Christopher Monckton. People can see these interviews in Executive Intelligence Review in the last few weeks. That's, you know, where you're listening now, or by phone, it's laRouchePub.com. But go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, I've interviewed, you know, like we're saying, Lord Christopher Monckton, different other people that have been around who really are speaking out and who really don't argue this from the standpoint of cost, but actually what is the principle? You know, the genocidal effects that has happened. You know, they're really, these people like Monckton really typify a fight that's really going on. And now Christopher Monckton has a very interesting pedigree. His grandfather, Walter Monckton, was good friends with Henry of King Edward VIII, who was the Nazi king. And when Edward came in, he was made the Attorney General for the Crown, for the British government. Now, what happened was Edward exposed that he was a Nazi, and the anti-fascists in Britain were moving to get him out because he was like the big symbol of what's be pro-Hitler for the financial oligarchy, which actually controls the crown. Okay, let's not be any illusions on this one. Now, what happened was they went to Walter Monckton, and he helped broker the abdication, removal of Edward VIII. So, but also, that was a very important fight. Monckton also was one of the key people that tried to shut down the Suez Crisis that Anthony Eden was trying to do, that did, of which Eisenhower intervened and cooled out. But Monckton was actually fighting to keep that from happening. So at a couple points, this family has spoken out, and including now, on trying to have some sane policy that is pro-human and have some development going and cooperation.
So, and I think Christopher Monckton, you're talking about, he's testified to Congress a couple times in March against the insanity of carbon dioxide as the cause of all the world's problem, and that we should cap it, and that we should have this crazy speculation in it. And he was a science advisor to Margaret Thatcher.
Yes.
That'd be the 1980s.
Yeah, he was the special science advisor to Margaret Thatcher, which is, this is a very interesting. Margaret Thatcher, you know, we want to look at the pedigree of this. Back in 78, when Margaret Thatcher came into power, she was one of the first woman leaders around. And Sir Crispin Tickle, who was the representative for the Great Britain to the United Nations, and a real genocidal lunatic who had written a book with Zolly Zuckerman, Lord Zuckerman, who was of the East-West Cybernetics, which is we now know as the International Institute of Applied System Analysis. This organization, IESA, is the ones who write the scenarios of what future development of mankind will be that's used in the IPCC, where you have this, it's double CO2, you're going to have 6 degrees of temperature, you're going to have heat death of the planet. It's done by the same system analysis, cybernetics grouping, that was formed with Zolly Zuckerman, who worked with Crispin Tickle, who was an advisor to Margaret Thatcher, and got her to go with this. Monckton was asked about the global warming hoax. He says, you know, 88 or before 88, he said, well, you know, it's interesting, it's popping out. Maybe we should spend some money to check it out. When the first set of data came back, he realized it was a total hoax, a total scare. There was nothing to see here. He denounced it. He got fired from the Evening Standard, who was on the editor board. So he's been attacked. And what was interesting, as Marshall pointed out, was Monckton testified in March. He actually testified a week after Tony Blair had this big global warming love fest to promote the cap and trade in the House with Nicholas Stern and others.
So it's a big fight, and that's what the pleasure of it is, that we can use this occasion to win. I mean, this is, I'm just thinking again of the universe laughing. There was frost in Nova Scotia last week. I mean, this thing is really all of those years of these lies that the boomers, as Ali was talking about, love to hear. It's just exposed. Now, one thing is that, Ali, to continue, you raised something about the people have to completely, we're intervening so that enough people, a ratio of people, start to change the way they think and don't just respond to their local circumstances, their comfort zone, but are thinking of the entire state of the universe, the state of condition at large. They have a larger identity. The state of the system, I guess you could say, mm-hmm. as a way of thinking what ought to be done in government, what we should pursue in science. Is that, by the way, I'll throw in here, you're part of the team that produced something. I invite everyone to go on LaRouchePack.com and look at Out of the Icebox. It's an LPAC TV. Could you say something about that?
Oh, yes. Well, I won't ruin the joke for it, for the actual video, but on the point that you were discussing, yeah, I would say one of the big problem is people are so wrapped up, in a sense, and you see it with the fact that as this whole entire system is going down, it's crashing, and as we're collapsing, it's what we need is we need people to stand up and, like they've never done before, and fight and say, you know, I'm going to fight for civilization. But you see, a lot of times you're organizing people or you're talking to people. I know I talk to my family, my friends, old friends, and the impression I get, the sense I get is, how can I survive this next crisis? How can we, what can we do to survive it? If everybody goes down, if you know, some huge virus, if the swine flu starts mutating or something like this occurs, and the majority of the people in the world are infected, what can I do to not be one of those people? And it's really the wrong way of looking at it, because, one, we have to realize that when we are at our worst as a society is when you have the culture oriented inward on itself, when people are looking merely at themselves rather than looking at what am I a part of. I am a part of a nation, a sovereign nation, and I'm going to work to develop the conditions of life within this nation, or I am a part of a span of history, of civilization, that does not end. My life does not end when I die, but I actually have to leave something behind. As Lynn said, you know, you have to think about it from the standpoint of what is the purpose of your having lived? And I think it's that kind of an existential, we are facing an existential question right now. And it's not an existential question of will I survive, but it's a question of will humanity survive at this moment in time. And so the question we have, especially those of us in the Political Action Committee, is how do we motivate people? How do we mobilize people to actually have that kind of an orientation, to fight for humanity and to fight to save their nation? And what must they do? And so that's where a lot of the website comes in. Obviously, I work at the website, and one of the biggest thing that we're trying to do is, one, provide people with idea content, with the true ideas necessary, preferably ironical ideas, you know, so that people actually get a sense of what reality actually is, that reality is not will I live to see this day or that day, but, you know, gives people a sense of an ability to, one, to laugh at the current culture that is dominating the entire society, because it really is funny. If you think about this, use global cooling as an example, it's hilarious. As you said, the universe is laughing. If anybody who takes any time to look into this, you know, they'll see many studies, including the solar cycles that Greg was bringing up, and including also if you look at astronomy, you look that there's, for example, things like the obliquity, the tilt of the Earth's axis, you know, how elliptical our orbit is, you know, how close we are, how far we are to the sun. There's these different cycles, astronomical cycles, which are thousands of years, 22,000, 40,000, sometimes up to 80,000 years in length. There's cycles that we don't know about. Mr. LaRouche, while we've mentioned the cosmic rays radiation coming from the Crab Nebula as having a huge effect on our weather patterns. So there's all of these different factors that we have to take into account when studying something such as what is the dominating trend that this planet is going in. Is it cooling or warming? So the funny thing is, if you know even a little bit about this, if you understand that we're living in this dynamic, if you understand that we're not living on just this in our own world, but if you see yourself as part of a whole universe, then you understand very clearly, and you can laugh at the people who purport these kinds of doomsday scenarios and say that you know, everything is warming because some people sprayed aerosol cans or Al Gore farted too much and let out too much carbon dioxide.
It's because your feet are too big and you're leaving a too big of a carbon footprint.
Yeah, you're leaving too big of a carbon footprint, which is so absurd, because anybody who knows anything about the carbon dioxide at all understands that carbon dioxide is part of a very crucial cycle within our planet, within our biosphere. Plants, especially green, extremely green leafy plants, love carbon dioxide. They eat it up. They eat up that along with the warm sunlight radiation, solar radiation, and water, and the byproducts that they create through the process of photosynthesis is oxygen, which allows us to breathe, which actually gives us our biosphere, and sugars or carbohydrates, which allow the plant to grow, which give us food to eat. So you see something like an attack on carbon dioxide. Cap and trade is it's the most ridiculous thing ever. You're attacking a very extremely vital and crucial part of the entire life cycle. So you wanna know people who say, you know, we're intervening too much into the planet, you know, we're intervening too much. You wanna know what a horrible intervention would be? It's not too much carbon dioxide. It's actually cutting carbon dioxide. If we were to impose cap and trade, not only is it gonna lead to the genocide of the majority of the people on this planet, because they're not gonna have the energy available to them to sustain their own lives, but it actually is going to destroy the biosphere. It's going to destroy the ability for adequate plant life to grow if we actually impose that kind of a cap. So it's an interesting thing. It's people not having an orientation towards figuring out what the truth is.
Right, and go ahead.
I was going to say, and that's what should be debated in the Congress.
Yes, that takes us around to the beginning. As Greg said, that is exactly what's not. You're getting other kinds of opposition, or you summarized it, Allie. You're saying, oh, well, it'll cost too much, or it isn't fair, or it's too big government or something. And just what you described about the mission, the role, the crucial intervention of the LaRouche Political Action Committee, in particular the LaRouche Youth Movement and the science projects, the basement project. I want to give the phone number for those on the phone who might not be on the website to see it. In the EIR is 800-278-3135. That's toll free, 800-278-3135. But I encourage everyone to go on LaRouchePAC.com also to get up to date and to engage, to help distribute, to give time, to give finances generously. You can call them at 800-929-7566. That's 800-929-7566. And what Allie was referring to in this closing segment of our hour-long show today about the astronomical cycles at large, the tilt of the Earth, the elliptical condition of the orbiting, and so forth and so on, and different mutual impacts between these cycles, is summarized Several places, but in one this year in Executive Intelligence Refer, I refer people to, you can find it on LaRouchePub.com. It's by Lawrence Hecht, the editor of 21st Century Science and Technology, Lawrence Hecht. And the title is Nature Warning Us of a New Ice Age? And that's January 30th, 2009 EIR. And in there are the diagrams for the different governing, as far as we know, orbital processes that Allie was referring to. There are diagrams of all of them, and also summaries of those who made breakthroughs in the science of understanding this over the last couple of centuries, as opposed to this crazy assertion like An Inconvenient Truth by Al Gore. That's just, as was said, a science fiction horror movie. But please read that in January 30th, 2009 EIR. So, well, I don't know. The American system, Allie, I guess, is also characterized. I'm thinking of Benjamin Franklin and how he had his weekly science meetings in Philadelphia of the Junto, where he would study everything from how to make glass to the nature of what was then understood as, not quite understood as, electricity, right? That this is what you're describing, is that you're trying to work to restore the American system policy outlook and science-based contribution to the world.
Yeah, and one thing on that, because the interesting thing about the American system, the interesting thing about the United States and our U.S. Constitution, everybody should read Lyndon LaRouche's new paper, The Rule of Natural Law, because in it he goes through how the beauty and really what makes America so unique from any other nation is the history of our fight to be a sovereign nation state. And our governing principle, the governing principle of this nation, of the United States, is not some arbitrary law. It's not positive law. It's not, you know, we don't have a how many hundred page constitution like they do in England or in other parts of Europe. But we have a constitution which is based on natural law, which is what Lyndon LaRouche develops in this paper. And it's based on natural law, the way that you see universal physical principles, the discovery of universal principles, such as, for example, Kepler's discovery of gravitation, or such as Vernadsky's discovery of the difference, the absolute difference and dominance of something like the biosphere, the living environment, over the non-living, and the actual difference, the transcendental difference, I would say, of human creativity over both the living environment and the non-living. And those kinds of discoveries are what actually define our mission as the United States of America. So if you think about that, the United States of America is based on a scientific outlook, on actually figuring out how it is, what is the real true place of human society within the universe. And so I would definitely encourage everybody to go and read that paper.
Thank you, Allie. And to support this effort she just described about the true mission, again, yes, and contributing all kinds of resources to the LaRouche Political Action Committee. What I'd like to do now in the concluding minute is take a moment for a very personal and sad announcement. Before I do that, I thank Greg Murphy and I thank Ali Parabakovsky, and I ask you all to remember on August 1st is the at 1 p.m. on LaRouchePAC.com is Mr. LaRouche's international webcast, never more critical than now. But the sad announcement is that about a little over a week ago, saw the passing of a very dear friend of mine and thousands of people who are relating to this particular program and Mr. LaRouche himself, Susan Schlanger in Texas. Susan Schlanger in particular, oh, she's been a longtime associate activist and leader in the effort associated with Mr. LaRouche. In Georgia, in the United States nationally, internationally, and in recent years based in Texas. She is the wife of Harley Schlanger, who is also a host of this program and well-known people to people as the Western States spokesman for Mr. LaRouche. And dear Susan was a powerful, wonderful, lovely woman who I have to say, since the beginning of this program, I could say many things about her, that is not the point right now, but she engaged with this program in particular, not because of her husband entirely at all, but because she was in touch with hundreds, in fact, thousands of people in the West, directly or indirectly in the Western states, and made a point of using this resource of this program as one of many ways to get a weekly briefing, especially before everyone went to electronic. And she did that to the very last hours and days of her life. We remember her, all of us here, George Hollis and other people, and I can speak for everyone. Really, it ends up being millions because we miss her terribly, but she is immortal, her contributions to this fight. I thank you very much. This is the LaRouche Show for Saturday, July 18th. This is Marcia Mary Baker.